The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
My next guest is the Sunday Times best-selling author of 14 novels. She won the Crime and Thriller Book of the Year at the 2019 British Book Awards for her gripping novel Our House, and she is returning with a new psychological thriller. Louise Candlish's new novel The Heights keeps the reader guessing as it follows the journey of a grieving mother through grief, obsession and vengeance. Louise joins us now to discuss it. Morning, Louise.
Hi there. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. What's really nice about the book is that the publishers have decided to put a spoiler alert on the actual back of it, or rather to put a spoiler on the back of it. So I feel confident in being able to talk about it instead of keeping it hidden. So the way it's described on the blurb is: The Heights is a tall, slender apartment building along the warehouses of Tower Bridge. Its roof terrace so discreet you wouldn't know it existed if you weren't standing at the window of the flat directly opposite. But you are. And that's where you see a man. A man you'd recognise anywhere. He's older now and his appearance has subtly changed, but it's definitely him. Which makes no sense at all, since you know he has been dead for over 2 years. You know this for a fact because you're the one who killed him. It's a cracking way to kick off a novel, it has to be said, Louise.
And that is the very first scene. So we thought it was fine to put a spoiler on the jacket, because you do discover this premise in the first couple of pages. And I suppose the question then is, how does the narrator, who's called Ellen, and she's a, you know, civilized, middle class lighting designer, how does a woman like that find herself in a position where she killed someone or thought she killed someone and is now paralyzed with shock because she thinks she's seen him again? So, you know, how can this, you know, ordinary woman be in this extraordinary, you know, and quite chilling situation?
Although it has to be said, the more that you are exposed to the putative murder victim through her eyes, the more you begin to think she might be justified.
Yes, well, that's the question. I mean, is you know, her actions are criminal, and, you know, is that ever justified? But yes, the central relationship in the story is Ellen, and the sort of antipathy she has for her golden boy teenage son's best friend, who's called Kieran. And it's a sort of instant mutual dislike, and it turns into a tragedy and a cat and mouse sort of revenge game. But yes, he's horrible. And I think, you know, his behavior and his attitude towards her will, you know, sort of strike fear into any parent.
Is that fun to write? I'd imagine writing the truly dislikable is very rewarding.
Oh, definitely. It's much more fun. And, you know, one of the things we do in thrillers is we take those kind of knee-jerk emotions that you feel in situations like meeting someone you instantly loathe. And, you know, we all might fantasize about some terrible thing happening to them. But in a thriller, you know, that actually happens. And, you know, she fantasizes about revenge. And rather than nipping it in the bud and, you know, talking herself down from those crazy feelings, she acts on it. So it's tremendous fun. It's really like, you know, it's like catharsis for the writer. It's like therapy. And I sort of hope it is for readers as well. You know, these characters are doing the things that you would fantasize about doing, but you know you can't do unless you want to, you know, sort of serve a prison stretch.
The other thing I'm intrigued about is how, because a lot of the book is written through the first person, through the eyes of Ellen. When you do that, do you have to make a conscious decision about the reliability of the narrator? And do you decide what elements you will include that should cause doubt? Or do you just treat them as if they're a perfectly accurate historical record?
No, it's very, very calculated and controlled on my part. And in this case, she's writing a true crime memoir. So we know she's controlling the information that she's giving the reader. And she's talking directly to the reader as well. She's quite intimate. You know, she addresses the reader frequently, and she, you know, she's quite confrontational, and she's asking the reader what they would do. So she's sort of seeking sympathy. And all of that is a very, you know, sort of controlled voice. And when I do that with a narrator, I really am careful not to trick the reader. I don't want to kind of deceive and lie in the voice of this first person narrator. But what I will do is cannily withhold certain bits of information. Or in the case of Ellen, I mean, she is, you know, borderline psychotic. So it's her truth, to use that very modern phrase. She believes everything she's saying. She's not lying or deceiving most of the time. She, you know, she really believes that Kieran is evil. And, you know, she can't stop the feelings she has about taking revenge on him.
How do you plot all of that out? Because in a book like this and in many of your others, you have the initial and core premise. You have the twist or twists. You have the narrator and, the, in this instance, the reliability or lack of it of that narrator. It's a huge amount of interplay and factors to work at. Do you storyboard all this out before you put pen to paper?
I usually start with the central premise, and I'll probably write a sort of straightforward synopsis, you know, of the kind that any first-time writer would be submitting to an agent, say, because I find that helps me, you know, literally work out the plot and what's going to happen and who does what when and where the key revelations should be. So I've always planned the revelations and the twists, but things like the sort of meta elements, so the, you know, this true crime memoir being the delivery system for the story. And also in the book, there's a Sunday Times journalist who's interviewing Ellen about the book. So you've sort of got this, you know, this layering of opinion and information that tends to come afterwards as I, you know, sort of seek to make it more of an interesting puzzle for the reader, because I know that that's what readers love, you know, sort of being the amateur detective as they read. And the more layers you get, I mean, there is a point at which it becomes just so complicated that, you know, someone would dash the book down. So I try and stop before we reach that point. But I do try and make it an interesting puzzle, and those extra layers will help do that.
I have to ask you about, you say the thing of the reader dashing the book down. I read an interview with you where you said that, because I've spoken to a number of authors who maintain that it is almost an immoral act to abandon a book once you've commenced it. Your view is the total opposite. If you're 20 pages in and this thing isn't causing you to turn the next page, fling it.
Definitely. But I think it might be an age thing, because I'm middle aged and I feel life is running out. And so I'm not going to waste time if I'm not enjoying something. You know, a book or, you know, a TV show, they're for entertainment. You know, we want to get some pleasure out of it. And so if that's not working for me, I will just put it aside. But that's not to say that, you know, it isn't the perfect read for someone else, but just not for me. I have no qualms at all. And, you know, we all have these, you know, probably more books than we can read. Authors are sent books all the time to sort of give quotes, advance quotes for, or just, you know, just books that we might enjoy. And so I can't get through them all. So if I've read a couple of chapters and I'm not enjoying it, I'll put it aside and I'll start something else. The next one might be the dream read for
exactly.
You.
And I have to say, having read you say that, I spent a lot of time thinking, was there ever a book that I forced myself through that at the end of it I thought, God, I'm glad I did that? And so far there may be one, but so far I haven't been able to recall it. Does it inform how you therefore write when you then go and finish your draft and do your reread and your final or additional drafts? Do you find yourself thinking, I need to shorten the gaps here between the next twist, between the next piece of excitement?
Definitely. I think that, you know, you're always being informed about pace by your own reading. And so, you know, because I know that I will throw down a book, and I think that, you know, lots of people will now, especially with, you know, sort of ebooks, and, you know, you can stack them up. So you've got literally one waiting with a click of the finger. I make sure that I hook the reader instantly. And I think that's the most important thing. So that they can't put the book down. There is an element of slow burn actually in my books, because things are very, you know, things are built up and then the revelations come thick and fast. But I try and hook the reader with the interesting premise and the emotional sort of hook right at the beginning. Otherwise, you know I risk losing them, because there are so many great books out there. So it has to be a really strong idea. It has to be placed in front of the reader immediately, so that, you know, they've read one chapter and they are desperate to know how on earth this person is in that situation. And I think the sort of intertwining timelines really help with that, because you build the tension naturally that way.
Well, it's evidently a skill you have honed to some degree, because it's not everybody who is described as the queen of the sucker punch twist. The book is called The Heights. It's written by Louise Candlish. It's available from this morning for about €15 in all good bookshops. Louise, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.